This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. Surprise birthday visitors at your house over the weekend, I saw on the Insta. And
That was so good.
Yes.
Yes.
Auntie Susie.
Yes. And I might have to share it in the Two Fat Expats group because I shared it on my Facebook because it was such a beautiful, beautiful moment that I thought, that's going to make everybody's Friday. So my husband didn't realize it was his birthday on Saturday. He had no idea that his sister, who he hasn't been able to see because of COVID and cancer, he hasn't seen her since Christmas and, you know, has, like everybody, been aching to see just anyone from his family throughout all of this, as she has he. And she surprised him and came over. And it was just such a good surprise because he had no idea. And I didn't tell any of the kids until right on the day, so no one could let it go. One of our kids picked up Auntie Susie from the airport, and then Auntie Susie hid in the butler's pantry. And so when Greg got home, one of the kids greeted him by saying, "Oh, Dad, like that one of the shelves is broken in the butler's pantry." And you can imagine he's just lost it, like, "Oh, great," sort of thing, because he's imagining all the cups and food and everything that were falling down. And as he's walking towards the butler's pantry, he's actually saying, "Who did it?" or something to that effect, or, you know, "What happened?" or whatever. Anyway, opens the door and out pops Auntie Susie. And it was just so beautiful because they just had the longest hug, and he was just so, there were tears, he was just so happy to see her, and it was just beautiful. So yes, I will share it in the group because I think that's one of the things about being an expat, isn't it? We all love a good reunion.
We do, absolutely love a good reunion. And things we love, one thing I love is that my red status on my coronavirus app has gone away because it's been over 14 days since my contact with a positive person for an extended length of time. So now I'm back to green. So I'm happy to be back in the green zone.
I'm very happy that you're back in the green zone too, because I can't imagine what that's like. You think, "Well, I don't feel sick," but you just, it just plays in the back of your mind, doesn't it? Yeah.
It 100% does. Kirsty, let's kick it off. Let's get straight into the four fat questions. And Kirsty, today, which will mean nothing in the future, but today is the first Tuesday in November, and it is the US election. When they wake up in America, they will be off to vote. So my question is this, Kirsty, do you follow US politics and will you be watching the election as it unfolds? And what about, this is an interesting question, how does your US politics watching compare to your Australian politics watching that you do? Is it different? And I want to know, have you educated everyone you've ever met about the democracy sausage?
Oh, a triple question. I'm far more into Australian politics than I am into US politics. The thing I love about the Australian election back in the days of the ABC being geo-blocked and you could never get in, was that was the one day that you could actually get all of the ABC, remember, because they would open it up and let all of the expat Australians watch it. That, and you need either a national disaster, like a flood or something to make them open it up, a bushfire. But yes, far more interested in Australian politics. I love the way Australian politics work. I love the way that we elect our local members, and, you know, that you can go and complain to your local member and say, "I'm not going to vote for you next time if you don't do this." When it comes to US elections, it is now almost impossible not to have the US election slammed down your throat. They are everywhere. particularly the comings and goings of Donald Trump. You know, he just seems to get so much airtime. And interestingly, Nikki, just slightly off track, you know how I was telling you I'd watched the Murdoch dynasty on ABC produced by the BBC? That is really interesting for part three when it shows you his involvement with Fox and his relationship with Trump.
Ah, yes.
And you're just reminded of that is how Trump gets so much airtime from Fox as well, of that particular relationship. And they show you the point when Murdoch decides, okay, I'm going to start taking you seriously. Because he definitely didn't at the start. He thought he was a buffoon at the start and openly tweeted. Can you remember Murdoch tweeting about Trump being a buffoon and he needed to disappear?
Yeah. I think Roger Ailes facilitated that relationship.
Yes, from my absolutely, yes. But do you know who runs Fox News now?
Lachlan Murdoch.
Yes.
And is it not a little bit horrifying to you? Because I always think, I think I can, for Rupert Murdoch, I can think, okay, that's fine. That's one generation removed from me. But Lachlan Murdoch is like a peer of ours.
Mm.
And it just makes me a little bit scared.
Yes. And we all thought, I'm sure we all thought back in the, 90s that Lachlan Murdoch was cute and kind of a little bit cool with his tattoos and his, cute haircut. I would have never have picked him as a conservative right-wing pundit. I would have gone that James, the younger child, was more that way. As it turns out, things have radically changed there. It's all very different, isn't it? Anyway, I'm getting off track. So, no, I will definitely be watching with interest tomorrow, but I don't follow it, not like you, Nikki Moffat, who lives and breathes it. But what I would like to know from our American listeners is I wonder how they feel about the Australians and the Brits being so invested in their politics. And because I don't know how I would feel if I opened up my Facebook page and saw all of my American friends being really opinionated about Australian politics. I think I'd feel happy, but then I don't know, because it's such a foreign idea that someone would be so interested in Australian politics.
Yeah, no.
Who wasn't Australian.
For sure. I agree with that. And I think the same way. And it shouldn't be surprising when Americans, say, it's not your country. You have no cultural background in this. Why are you commenting, et cetera, et cetera. So and people think they know about American politics because they read stuff or they see stuff. Whereas, we would say, well, why do you think you know about Australian politics? For the same reasons. We grew up in Australia. We live there. We understand how the parliamentary system works and we understand how the elections work. And, my daughter's in grade 8 here and they're doing projects on comparing. Her teacher is American, so they're comparing the US and there's a US election, so they're comparing the US system of electoral system versus their own country. So she's doing Australia. So for me, explaining to her the differences, I was just, wow, that's mind-blowing, really, when I pointed out all the differences that are involved and yes. how different components work. And I said, well, she said, this is also confusing. I said, well, let's just start with the democracy sausage.
Yes, you must explain the democracy sausage to all.
And so I said, in Australia we have elections, they're 3 weeks. Like the US election goes for, it seems like, 2.5 years, whereas our election cycle is 3 weeks. We have really restricted spending. We have really restricted all sorts of different things, and we have compulsory voting. So there is no get out the vote because you got to vote. So it's just a totally different mindset, I think, in terms of participation.
Yeah, like it always amazes me that someone like a Dick Cheney ended up being the vice president, but he wasn't ever elected by people, Do you know, he didn't run for local government. He didn't do any of that. Do you know, that would be unheard of within our system. Do you know, you have to have done grassroots politics and gone out and door knocked and, you know, spoken to the people, and people have to have elected you. And I remember because that was around the time that we were, you know, in North America too. I was just thinking, how does that happen? How does Dick Cheney get elected or get to vice president without anyone actually voting for him?
Yeah, and this is the difference I was also explaining to my daughter about, you know, an Australian prime minister can be changed during the term of government. And she's like, no, whoa. She's like, what? And I said, well, because the Australian prime minister is the head of the party. Well, isn't Donald Trump the head of the Republican Party? I said, well, yes, now. I said, but he ran for that. I said, in Australia, the party gets elected. Everyone gets elected. And then the party, the people who are elected, vote between all the people that were elected who should be the leader. Oh, she said, that sounds weird. I was like, no, that sounds right. That sounds right. So it just really depends how you grow up. But I mean, you're right. The US election is all encompassing, really, in all terms of media, I guess, because of the size of the country and the impact that it's had on the world in the last 50 years, certainly in our lifetime and since, you know, since the early 1900s. So anyway, I'm just very interested in how all that works. And I'm not sure whether we did cover what's a democracy sausage. So do you want to quickly cover it before we move on for anyone who might not be aware?
I want to know how you explained it to Willow. What did you tell her?
About the democracy sausage. I said, well, now after explaining that there's no commerciality in Australian elections in the same way, I said, now there's this place called Bunnings. No, anyway, no, I said because elections are compulsory in Australia, and because schools and churches are a lot of the polling places, then the organisations associated with those schools and churches are allowed to raise money, and one of the ways they do that is through a sausage sizzle. And so there, I said, in the olden days when we were growing up, it was all very basic and straightforward. But now it's much more complex, and there's ratings on the different sausages at the different polling booths. And, you know, a polling booth is measured by the breadth of the type of sausage. Are there vegan sausages? Are there vegetarian sausages? Are there, you know, gourmet lamb sausages? And I said, you know, but it's just basically part of everyone being there. You go and you vote and you come out. But interestingly enough, I heard this week that the average Australian voting experience, I think I might have heard this on LDC, it's 15 minutes between when you arrive at your voting location and when your vote is completed.
Wow.
And you look at now the lines, like one of the things you see on TV is the lines of people waiting hours and hours to vote in the US, and you just think what a different and amazing experience that is.
Yes 15 minutes, that's pretty impressive from go to woe, isn't it? Yeah,
I think so, you've got to park the car or walk down or whatever you do, and then yeah,
I heard a great one the other day where when we were in Queensland, and Cousin Karen was telling us that the last time she'd gone to vote, she'd walked because of course all the different pollsters are out the front trying to encourage you to vote for their person, and she said there was a group of the opposing group that she would have chosen to vote for, and a woman came up and said, would you like to vote for, you know, let's call her Susie Smith? And Cousin Karen said, I most definitely would not, something else very derogatory, and wandered off, and then realised that it was actually the person that was running for election that she tossed it to, not just a random supporter. Yeah. I thought that was gold. Okay, Nikki, I have a question for you. So I recently saw a post from one of the Fatterati in our Two Fat Expats Facebook group, and she was saying that she was going to pay for a golden passport to move to Portugal. And I thought, wow, do you know, I wonder if in this COVID time, will there be more people thinking about this or less? I'm not sure. But if you could have a passport from any of the countries that offer golden passports, where would it be?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really good question. I guess I've never really considered it.
Mm.
But now might be a good time to, since my passport doesn't seem to take me anywhere, certainly not to the country it's from. But look, for me, I would probably say somewhere in the EU, which really blows my mind because before I don't think I ever would have thought about that. But when I was thinking about this and thinking about the EU, I would find it hard to do that in a country where I didn't speak the language. And I think just the thought of learning another language at my age is very disconcerting. I'm thinking ahead to next summer and to Danish. But I don't really know. But I would say, like, Portugal would have to be up there because I'm not moving to a country that's cold. I can tell you that right now. And, you know, you want to move to a country with sort of not a really super high cost of living. So I mean, certainly a Southern European country with some sunshine and some sort of laid back living and with an easy to learn language. That's what I'm putting out there. What about you?
Well, yeah. I had a quick look of where some of the options were, because for those that don't know, a golden passport is a passport that you basically buy. You have to go and invest into a country, or, you know, be able to show that you can have enough money in your bank account and enough money to, you know, look after yourself. So some of the countries that you can are Canada, Cyprus, Greece, Malta, New Zealand, Portugal, Singapore, Spain, Switzerland, United Kingdom, or the United States of America. Now, I think Australia's in there as well, but you need about $5 million before you can even start in your conversation, whereas other countries it's a lot less. I think the Portugal one, I'm really bad here, but I think it might have been about either 250,000, was it, Nikki?
Yeah, well, so it's 350,000. It depends whether you're buying property or investing in a fund. So it's two different things.
Right.
But I just on that, the Cyprus one is currently on hold.
Uh-huh.
Because it was 2 million euro, I think, and they found they did a sting operation where they presented a fake person from China with a criminal record. Ooh. and they found a high level government minister willing to sell them
right.
the Cypriot passport.
Right.
So that they've put that on hold for now.
Got
it. I think all the other countries are still legit.
So I reckon if I had to choose, I would go for Malta, because my third child was born in Malta. So I have very much a soft spot for Malta, and I really like the island of Gozo, which is just off of Malta, and have had some lovely rabbit stews out in the courtyard with a glass of vino there in the past, and it's pretty and it's very – Malta's sort of is – I think it's the smallest country in the world still. I'm not sure, but it used to be. And it sort of falls south of Italy, for those who are trying to think, and north of Libya. So, yes, my third child was born there, but I reckon that's what I'd go for, because you're in close proximity to Europe, so you could still sort of hurdle around there. But I think it's just a really pretty place, and the weather is incredible.
Yeah, good weather. Okay, I'll look into it. What's how are you for language skills there?
Not good, but if you sing everything, you're fine. You just need to talk like this. It's beautiful. Maltese is sort of a mix, I guess. I'm about to make Maltese people shout at me, but I think there's a mix of sort of Italian and Arabic, like a little bit of Arabic. So, yeah, I think it's beautiful.
Perfect. Okay, Kirsty, an easier question to answer perhaps for you. When do you put the Christmas decorations up, and is it influenced by the traditions of the country that you're in, by your past traditions, or have you never thought about it?
Yeah, definitely, because you can be walking through a supermarket in July in Qatar and go, oh, Christmas carols, because someone's put the wrong music on. But obviously when we were in North America, big on decorations, do you know, and it was the whole snow and those deer that that move and their little noses go down to the ground and go back up and down, and coloured lights and the whole thing. So I think we were definitely, the tree was up. The standard is the tree should be up by December 1. But I have to say there has been a lot of little tiny children and, oh, my goodness, we're going to have to put the tree up and then we're actually leaving in a week to go away and, you know, we won't be back to whenever and then we're going to have to pull it all down again. Is it really worth it? But this year we will all be here in Australia. It will be a real Christmas tree, a live living Christmas tree. We'll get delivered to the door. It'll be about somewhere between 6 and 7 feet tall from the local Christmas tree farm. It gets plonked in a bucket and decorated. I love Christmas. I love Christmas decorations. So I'm aiming for a delivery around December 4.
Okay, good to know. So I guess my daughter came to me. I was in the laundry on the weekend. She said, I think it's time we had this conversation. I said, what conversation are you talking about? She said, when are we getting the Christmas decorations down from the attic? She is Miss Christmas. I mean, she wears a Santa hat all of December, pretty much, yeah, to school. Doesn't care how old she is. Just she is so into Christmas. I cannot tell you.
Love
she
it.
Loves it, loves it, loves it. And last year, recently when we did the attic clean out, I went up and I found the Christmas tree was not really, we don't have a real Christmas tree. I mean, we do sometimes have a real Christmas tree, but when we are away, we use a fake Christmas tree. And I found the Christmas tree sort of not really put back away properly. It was just sort of all around the box rather than in the box. And I came downstairs and said, right, that's it. I said you could have Christmas decorations last year because, of course, we went to Australia for nearly a month. If you put them away properly and the tree is just in disarray upstairs. I guess she thought it was enough time had passed since we had this conversation about the tree. But I don't think it was till I went to the US that I was aware of that there was a time. Like I always thought, okay, December. Like if in the beginning of December, that'd be okay. But they're very specific in the US about what happens because they have all these what they call holidays at the end of the year. So they have their Halloween and then they have Thanksgiving and then the day after Thanksgiving, bang, everything, like it's all autumn wreaths, and then the day after Thanksgiving, bang, yep, it's like Christmas. It's just like it's magically springs up overnight. And then we moved, which my daughter loved because that's even before the 1st of December, and then we moved to this to Germany, and the tradition in Germany is the tree is put up on the 24th of December and taken down on the 7th of January. I mean, my daughter can't live like that. That's outrageous. So she, you know, but it's very, it just made me realize that in the beginning, I wasn't really influenced by other countries. I think maybe because I had little kids and I was just like, I'm just going to do my own thing. Mm. Whereas maybe as I've got older and I've paid more attention to things around me, I think perhaps countries I've lived in have influenced me more about Christmas. I think you can always have your own traditions within your own doors, but if someone comes to your door on the 1st of December, there's a big Christmas wreath on it, they might be a little bit confused or think you're a bit strange. And in Germany, they might tell you you're wrong.
I think there's a definite American influence there because, and also maybe it's age, because I think when I was younger with young children, I was just going to put up the tree when I could. Like I was just trying to stay alive, yeah. Do you know?
Yeah.
I've recently been watching all of our home videos, you know, now that Vladimir has given me back half my hard drive. And I look at those videos and all I can think when I watch them is, oh my gosh, that was just complete chaos. You know, everything, there's just kids just writhing all over each other all the time and stuff everywhere and food everywhere and 2 gallon milk bottles, you know, like massive milk bottles to drink out of, for, you know, everything was humongous and busy. And so I think really when the kids were young, I just did it when I had a moment and when it was time, there was no set day. Whereas now I think as you get older, and definitely America influenced me because I know exactly what you mean. There was that real thing, Thanksgiving's done, bang, we're at Christmas, and people had themes for their wreaths on their doors.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there was an expectation, there was a level to be kept sort of thing. And so I think I probably thought about it more, and now I'm older and things are a little bit more, you're not the chaos. There's definitely still as much to do, but there isn't the chaos of small children. So, yeah, you kind of there's more planning, perhaps. What I do love about Christmas traditions is the countries I've lived in that are predominantly Muslim, and people would think, well, you wouldn't have done much Christmas there. I still have Christmas decorations from all of those countries. Do you know, like Jakarta, yeah. They had beautiful homemade Christmas decorations, and the same thing in Malaysia. We bought our, you know, fake Christmas tree in Malaysia. It was a gift, you know, from Greg's family. So I do have lots of Christmas nostalgia of different countries when you would maybe think I wouldn't. Even Libya.
There you go. See, it's a question worth considering as we roll into November.
Okay, Nikki, while we're on the themes of festivals and celebrating, because it is November 3rd as we speak, Halloween. I am busting to know what it looked like for you this year. I did ask in the group because I was really interested in how COVID worked for Halloween, and how it affected people and how people felt about it. What did it look like for you?
Well, it was the weekend before Germany implemented a next stage of restrictions. And so the government mm-hmm. did issue a request and asked people not to trick or treat. That was a thing. And also we were back at the stage of you could only have two households meet up to 10 people. So that's not very fun. Both my children did dress up. At 17 and 14, they were both very aggressive in their early early October requests for what they want for their outfits, which I found very strange. My daughter is right into Harry Potter, as I've said before, and so she wanted the full Slytherin yes. get-up. So she has the Slytherin tie, the Slytherin scarf. The Slytherin, of course, has a different, cloak or academic gown than the other ones. My son dressed up as his latest D&D character. So, but my daughter went to a friend's house. I'm just going to leave it at that, where she was the only other person going. But as I drove away, I may have seen someone else on a bike appear. I'm not going to comment on that in terms of restrictions. But she didn't go trick-or-treating, but she went and just hung out with a friend.
Ah.
A friend. My son did an online event where they played the regular weekend D&D game, and so he dressed up and had his hair is white for this particular character, so we had to do all that. So he was happy with the online stuff. We have neighbors across. The first 3 years I was here, we live at the top floor of we live at the top of 100 steps. I'm sure I've said that a lot. And the first 2 years I was here, I bought so much candy and no one ever came. And this year it was a public holiday in Germany on the Saturday, which means that all supermarkets were shut. So you have to do all your shopping on Friday. So when you're in the supermarket on Friday, it's an absolute nightmare because there's 10,000 people who think the supermarkets aren't opening again. So I was like running home from work. I was trying to get to an online event. And anyway, it was a disaster and I forgot to buy candy. But we have new neighbors across the hall and they have little kids. And they knocked on our door all dressed up.
No!
And I was so horrified. But you know what? Bless these people. The partner of the father of the kids had some in her pocket and she snuck it out to me. So when they finished their little poem, because in Germany you have to say a whole poem, it's not just trick or treat, I was able to dole back out the candy that they had secretly given me. So, but I
she deserves
really
Mother of the Year.
I know.
Isn't she? Not,
and she's their stepmother. So she's like brilliant.
Oh, she's absolutely good. Brilliant. She's really good. Hey, look, I loved it. I love seeing that in some of the countries, like I noticed we have Jodie in our group who's teaching in India and they are still in lockdown and she had completely dressed up to teach online all day. She'd gone to the trouble, you know, to at least look the part for the kids. I thought that was really gorgeous. But then, you know, you have the other extreme. There's people in Thailand who really seem to have done well with COVID. You know, they said on their compound it was, you know, pretty much business as usual. There was just such a vast difference. I think it was pretty quiet in Singapore.
Yeah.
But I have a girlfriend, Bridget, who is the master. She actually has a page called Mrs. Dunn's Art Fun, and she's an art teacher, and she's always one of those people that does incredible, you know, arty, crafty things. But she had in Saudi managed to make, I think she called it the COVID Python cannon, and she had this huge snake that ran down from her window that was the lolly dispenser that put all the treats in it so that people didn't have to make contact. I thought that was really good as well.
Yes, that was, there was a lot of that in America, the candy shoot. Yes, I saw a lot of that going on. Yeah. And I had a friend here who actually, some little neighborhoods still did trick-or-treating, but they just didn't encourage like lots of stuff. I had a friend here who put her daughter's pumpkin carry patch on the end of a Swiffer, so she like took the off the Swiffer but had like a big long so it was like a big long handle, and so she could put it out like it was almost like she didn't have to get very close to anyone that was handing over the candy. But I had another friend here that I tagged in the group because I thought what she did was so amazing. So they didn't go anywhere, but she sent an invitation to her two kids for a day of fun, and she did a 12-hour program in the house.
Are you serious? 12? What do you do for 12 hours? What did she, were they exhausted?
That's why I wanted her to comment. But they made Halloween breakfast. And then they, you know, they did a Lego project, and then they did something else. And then they, I think they did a little bit of haunted house things within their own house. And then they watched a movie together. And so it was just like this whole day. And she said the kids went straight to sleep. Absolutely no problem. So people came up with amazing and incredible ideas.
I really liked Molly, who is American but married to an Australian, and they did a Halloween themed pub quiz on Skype.
Yes.
And they did it from their apartment in Rome for all of their friends in Italy. But they also had friends from Northern Ireland and the US, and they dressed up, and she's put a picture of them. They're both there with their fangs and their blood trickling down their mouths. I thought they were really good. I love COVID. Has really brought out the best in some people, hasn't it? For just deciding, nah, that's it. You're not gonna kill it for us. We're gonna come up with something. And there was another picture, Samantha Watt, who'd dragged her kids out for pumpkin picking, and they are literally knee deep in mud. And there's these two kids sitting in a wheelbarrow in her picture, looking really unimpressed, and she's in the background looking like this crazed pumpkin hunter. It was very, very enthusiastic, very, very enthusiastic. I loved it. So, yes, Nikki, on to, I should say, how's your 66 days of? Well, hashtag 66 days of.
Yes, I hope you saw it all on the socials. I did quite a lengthy introduction to my 66 days of. It's going okay. It's going all right. I've really inspired my husband. He's been telling me, come on, I've been on, you know, it's your turn. He's really into it. Good news, Kirsty, you can add a hashtag on Peloton and follow particular hashtags. So if you are on Peloton, I've added a hashtag. I'm the only one who's on it at the moment, called 66 Days Of, and then another one for Two Fat Expats. Because when I posted my silly videos about, you know, doing my first day on the Peloton, I had a friend message me and say, what, you've got a Peloton? Here, I'm following you. And I was like, oh, I don't think you need to follow me. That's not necessary. And she said, no, it's all good. I need to. So, yeah, no, what about you? How's your stretching?
My stretching is good, but it's amazing. You know, I chose stretching because it would be, you know, the easy thing. And you're right, it does make you do it. But even yesterday I did it and I didn't take a photo. So today I will be taking photos and sharing. Nikki, three favourite things. I reckon I've got about 10 minutes till you have to do your online parent teacher interview this morning. So let's whiz through it. What are your three favorite things for this week?
Okay, so a quick one, Rebecca, Don't Bother. Rebecca the movie, it's been redone based on the novel.
I saw that.
All-star cast.
Didn't like it.
It's fine for Netflix. Definitely wouldn't be paying money to go to the movies to watch it. This week, Enola Holmes. So I watched that. I know that's very teen and tween friendly as well. But I have never seen Stranger Things, and I was very taken by Millie Bobby Brown as an actress in the title role. I really enjoyed
it. You've never seen Stranger Things, but you've watched all of these other teen series.
I don't like scary stuff.
Oh, fair enough. Do you know what? I probably wouldn't have watched Stranger Things had my children not really wanted to watch it. So that's probably fair. I did watch it with them, but we did a family one where we all sat on the couch under blankets.
I remember.
Yes, all of us terrified together.
I don't know. Have you seen Enola Holmes?
No, I haven't. I did see that pop up on my, recommended. Would you recommend it?
Yes, I do. And I said to my daughter, have you seen it? She said, yeah, it's really good. I said, okay, I'll watch it. And then she said, did you like it? Yeah. And then I just want to talk about, for a couple more minutes, my accidental find. So last night I was in a WhatsApp group, and a friend of mine here who is a journalist and her husband's also a journalist said, oh, if you're interested, there's a show on German TV tonight called My American Family, and it's about the election, and surprise, my dad's the Trumper. And so I thought, oh, okay, we don't have German TV, but I said, is there a way to watch it online? And she said, yes. And so I went and found it, and it was a lovely documentary. It was in German, so I don't really know how much I understood, but it was the start where they'd start, because it had been filmed when they went earlier a couple of months ago, I guess, to the US to her father got remarried. So they went to his wedding, and then her husband went on to visit different parts of America and parts of her family. But it said,
hold it. So this show is totally about her family?
It's a German journalist going to the States and talking about his wife's family.
Oh.
And how it's seen, it's sort of looking at the election from a German perspective, because it's fair to say that a lot of people outside the US don't really understand how people vote for Donald Trump, and so particularly in Germany, and so it's, and a lot of people do, but it's basically a German journalist going on a journey of speaking to everyday people, and they happen to be his wife's family or friends of his wife. So the program starts, but it's one of those shows where, you know, they start talking in English, and then the person speaks over, the narrator speaks over the top of them, you know, translating what they're saying. And so you sort of start to get it. Anyway, I quite enjoyed it. I watched it. It was good. But then I found myself in this online German sort of TV station. I thought, oh, what else can I see in here to have a look at that I don't look at on German TV?
Yeah.
And I found this show called Parliament. And it's like, I forget, you know, there was a show called The Games about the Sydney 2000 Olympics, which was done by comedians. It was just about how ridiculous it all is. You know, like it's just like.
Yes.
And so I want to say it's kind of like that. So it's a show, it's basically a comedy about the EU. So it's based in Brussels, and it starts off a few weeks after the Brexit referendum. A guy takes a job as an assistant to an MEP, which is a member of European Parliament, and he doesn't know much about how it all works. And on his first day, he's tricked into into being in charge of an amendment, which to ban cutting off shark fins. And so the whole first 10 episodes is about how he just has to find out how to navigate all the bureaucracy and try and get this amendment about shark fins passed. But I found was really interesting was that the dialogue is, it's a French show, but the subtitles are in German because it's on a German site. But because it's based at the EU headquarters, a lot of it's in English, and it's different European people. It's a show that basically seamlessly moves between languages in filming.
Wow.
And that to me was really fascinating, because I was thinking,
yes,
you don't see that a lot. Like you see shows that are mainly in one language and then sometimes they talk another or whatever. But this, like, these are like people walking up and down the hallways speaking in French and then turning around saying something to someone in English and then changing it a little bit of German. There's a little bit of, I think, Spanish or Polish or something. And it's just... so it is funny. It does have subtitles.
Can you put a link? you put a link in for us so we can all go and have a look?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm going to find out if people can see it outside of my German TV station. And then whether it also has English subtitles, because that would probably be a little bit more helpful for everyone, including me. But I've watched 2 or 3 episodes. I kind of got into it. Anyway, Kirsty, I just thought that's a pretty good recommendation. It's a bit out of the box, and for me also a bit out of the box. So there you go. What have you got, Kirsty?
Okay, so you know I've mentioned how I love David Tennant's podcast.
Yes.
So David Tennant has done an interview with Tim Minchin, and Tim Minchin, of course, is an Australian musician but is also the playwright for Matilda, I think is probably his biggest international credit, would you say, Nikki?
Yep.
Yeah. And so Tim Minchin, and he's come back to live in Australia because he's got children that have sort of reached the teenage years, and he feels that that's the sort of best place for them. He openly says he doesn't think it's the best place for him work-wise, but he thinks it's the best place for him family-wise right now. But I loved so much about this interview.
No, it's fantastic.
I don't even know where to start to start telling you how much I loved about it.
But I don't always listen to all David Tennant's podcast interviews, but when I saw the Tim Minchin one, I was like, oh, I want to listen to that. And yeah, no, it was excellent.
Look, there's one thing he said, something, you know, when you go, oh my gosh, that's been bugging me too. But it's how people throw around the term imposter syndrome, you know, that I suffer from imposter syndrome and whatever. And then eventually, and that came up, and then eventually he said, David, do you think it's really wanky when people say that, particularly people who've been quite successful? Yeah. And then went on to say why it was really wanky to say that, and saying, you know, obviously he said, because I have been successful and I've done quite well, quite often I look at other people's work and I think, yeah, that was good, but I could do it better than that. Do you know? And he said, but at the same time, I might say I've got imposter syndrome because I've got a bit of self-doubt about something. But he said, you know, it's just a complete sort of overreaction for people. I really enjoyed his take on his concern about his kids being the kids of a famous person and what that must be like. I've always been really interested in people who do something incredibly well, whether it's footballers or baseball players or whatever, and what that is like for their children. And I think he really addresses it very, very well about how, you know, he said if his daughter's playing a certain piece, he's absolutely itching to say, that's not E minor, but he knows what will happen if he says that's not E minor, and how she will not find it delightfully cute of him doing that. Look, I really thoroughly enjoyed the interview. I thought it was great.
So David Tennant yesterday, or recently in the last week, has dropped a podcast of all the outtakes from his interviews over the second season, and there were some more little Tim Minchin gems in there, and I just listened to that yesterday, so you might want to listen to that one too. It's a good one.
Lovely. Okay, I will go back now. In the old days when I was uncultured, I might have said George Jensen, but of course I've been corrected now that it is Georg Jensen. So I don't know if this is a worldwide phenomenon, but bottles of sparkling wine, you know, we would call them champagne, but of course the French won't let us. We call it Prosecco or bubbles now in Australia. With the Jensen stoppers in them. Someone gave me one for Christmas last year, and I remember thinking, oh, what a fantastic hostess gift that they brought it because we were having a dinner party. And, you know, you of course get left with this fantastic champagne stopper, but I've noticed they're back heavily in circulation and I love them. So if anyone else is around, and I think we had a bottle of Veuve and a bottle of Georg, I preferred the Jensen above the Veuve.
Controversial,
I know. But the Veuve was selling at about $89.
Yes.
It was a birthday bottle of champagne. And I would have happily have gone for the $30 Georg. Yeah. Yeah, Jensen, totally. Are they in your neck of the woods as well, Nikki?
No, I don't know. I do a lot of sparkling wines, French sparkling wines, the first year I was here, the French ladies taught me champagnes, I should say, and sparkling wines, because the lady said, you know, you don't need to buy those brands that you're going to know the names of. You know, I'll tell you some other ones. So I just know that where they are in the supermarket, and I buy them. And they're sort of in the sort of Excellent. 20 to 30 euro range, and I'm very happy with them. They're my fancy ones.
Yes. Yes. All right. Now, my third one is I am doing NaNoWriMo, which stands for the National Writing Month.
I know. That's so exciting.
And I'm actually, here we are, November 3rd, and I've been doing it, 1,500 words a day. And I am enthused. I've got my ideas down. I am absolutely loving it. So maybe this is just what I needed, Nikki. This comes in the no shit Sherlock category of, it's amazing how when you just start doing it, the ideas do come. They're not going to come to you while you're just going for a walk on the beach. You've got to just sit down and start. And so I've had some good conversations with my mum, I have to say, in amongst thinking about writing this and having conversations with her about things. And so it's just the whole experience has been wonderful.
That's so good. So 50,000 words, basically. You come out at the end of November with 50,000 words. Is that right?
Yes.
And so a 200-page book is about 55 to 60,000 words. So, Kirsty, when are we looking at publication?
Should have a book. Well, because I'm thinking sort of, I think the average novel is about 70 to 80,000 words. So, but yeah, I don't need to do a big one, do I? So who knows?
No, doesn't need to be big.
Doesn't need to be.
Easy reader.
Exactly. But
the thoughts are the concepts.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes. Okay. All right.
I'm very excited.
Nikki, is it
1 minute till I have to speak to, oh, have to speak to Herr Humph about German.
Okay, I will let you go and I will speak to you next week. Okay. Great chat.
Okay. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.